the Hebrew Order of David is one of our community's oldest and most established global outreach organizations. Join Stan Claff for the next hour as he explores the issues facing the men in the community. The HOD Hour is a fundraising initiative for the HOD. Welcome to the HOD Hour with Stan Claff. This is the HOD Hour with Stan Claff.
And guess what? You're with Stan Claff, and you're with Natalie Solomon.
Hello.
And you're with Thabo Mlangeni. And tonight we're talking about, well, guess what? The Springboks are the world champions, and we're talking about what makes a champion, the mindset of a champion. And we're going to be talking to Tony Gaddy, a clinical psychologist who specializes in these qualities, the skills and tools that create whole champions in all aspects of life, and I guess mainly sport, because she has a sporting background. She's been, first of all, she's been to Wimbledon as a tennis player. She's a champion tennis player in South Africa. She's a frequent contributor to Radio 702 about performance psychology, and she consults and presents to top national and international sports people. And welcome, Tony.
Thank you very much, Stan. Hello to all.
Welcome.
Hi. So, Tony, I guess it's a lot different to trying to make a team into champions than it is to make one individual, because, I mean, you've got, first of all, you've got 23 players, 15 are on the field, the other 8 are dying to get on the field, and the others are trying to keep on the field and be the champions. So where do you even begin?
So I think what is so interesting for me, and I've been reading and analyzing since the World Cup started, what is interesting about Rassie Erasmus was how he took the diversity of the team and he allowed everyone to express their own unique stories and to be able to disclose the struggles about their backgrounds. And when you disclose the struggle about your background, your vulnerability, it's much easier for a team to bond and to connect. And the captain often spoke about how Rassie took them to places they had never been before.
Like Japan.
yeah. 100%. So to places they'd never been before in terms of training and working hard, in terms of putting the Springbok and what it means to be the Springbok much beyond their personal aspirations, and how being the Springbok is about representing a country and inspiring and motivating a country to feel great just in the moments of watching the game, and how a sportsman and a team can actually play that role.
Yeah, so, I mean, it was fascinating over the whole World Cup, how the team changed its tactics, but they kind of gave England a bit of a sucker punch in that they, obviously at the end they changed the total tactic, and, you know, England were completely, which they had done the week before to New Zealand, they were completely, you know, they didn't have an answer. So, but I think that watching them, and each individual seemed to have a self-belief. Whatever they were doing, they knew that they had a role to play, and that people around them would be there in support. And I guess that is also part of the psychology, is knowing that you're part of a team, but yet, you know, everybody around you is your team. And I mean, that takes a lot of faith.
Yes. What was so interesting is the way the coach handled the commentary around losing to New Zealand. And what's fascinating, his language was all about being honest about what the Springboks did wrong, but he didn't moan about it. He didn't complain about it. He was just very objective in terms of how the Springboks struggled with perhaps their nerves. And he even admitted that they all struggled with the pressure before the game and during the game. And the fact that he was open about that to the press, to his team, they were able to feel the anxieties and the pressure around what it was going to take to channel that kind of anxiety into the rest of the matches. And at the same time, not only being open about the struggles they had before playing New Zealand and during playing New Zealand, that he also kept backing them. He kept telling them that doesn't help to complain about this match. We are just going to work harder. We are going to keep believing in each other, as you said, and continue to challenge each other toward our higher purpose. And his higher purpose throughout the World Cup was about creating hope for the ordinary South African. And in fact, after the match, he spoke about how he sat down with his team. Well, this is, of course, according to what I've read and what I've watched in the media. And they spoke about what is pressure really for South Africans, for the ordinary South African. And the pressure of a World Cup, of course, is immense. They didn't deny that. But they got the whole team to dig down deep into the struggles of their lives at home and for the ordinary South African. And that's more about getting a job and holding your job and about maybe having your relative murdered. And they spoke about how it's such a privilege for them for being on the TV and getting the South African support around them just for that short amount of time, to inspire hope in the South Africans at home and to gain momentum. And, this kind of belief that Rassie instilled in the team and selling them this bigger vision really made them unstoppable after the New Zealand match. And you saw that with the scores. It was quite remarkable.
So typically, champions need to present themselves as robust, as resilient, and not necessarily expose vulnerabilities. What do you think it was that allowed them to connect with that part of themselves rather than shying away from it?
So what is so interesting, Natalie, is that, as I said, I've alluded to it earlier, that he spoke about how terrible it was for him being a coach for a first-time World Cup. And he spoke about this to the team, and they had many conversations around the pressure of playing against New Zealand for the first match, one of the best teams in the world. And just being open about that vulnerability, as I said, gave them an insight into how to feel it, how to support each other, and how they need to channel it into the next games going forward. So did I answer your question?
Yeah, so maybe like a top-down approach where he leads them in terms of showing them that it's okay to engage with these difficult parts and then gives them permission to engage with that.
Yeah, so exactly what you said. I mean, Stan spoke about how getting a whole team to have the mindset of a champion, it's really about speaking about one individual, and when one individual can access their weak parts mentally and know how to fortify them with tools and share that with the rest of the team. And so did the coach. The coach was open about and honest about how he felt and how the team needed to back each other. And he kept telling them how good they are, which was quite remarkable for me, because it's quite unusual for a coach to be so open about, yes, you can do it, and you can win, and you guys are so good. So he was unyielding in his backing.
And growing up, we were taught cowboys don't cry. You know, you're a rugby player, and you don't have feelings. You just go in and you bully the opposition into submission. And this is not a question of emotion, you know. And we know that you're a good guy deep down, and you come from a humble background or whatever. But we're not interested in that. We just want you to go out there and win the game.
Yes, that's what I felt was so remarkable about this coach. From the start, he was honest about his own responsibility and his own struggles. I mean, his very first meeting with the team, he sat them all down and he said that if in order for them to buy into his vision, he needs them to put the Springbok and the country as number one and put their own personal aspirations below that. And then he spoke about how apparently in, I think it was 2018, they lost two matches. And he disclosed even on the media that he said to the team, guys, if I'm going to lose this third match, I'm going to resign because I have to take the responsibility to take you to the next level. And it's beautiful how he was so honest about his struggle and his need to take that responsibility. And he modeled that to the team. And then going forward, as I said, with his vulnerability around the pressure of this first-time World Cup, about losing for the first match, and everybody rallied together with their experience of what it felt for them after the first match.
Do they have psychologists there? I mean, or is this just between the coach and the team, or is there help on that side? In other words, are they being guided in what they're doing? Or is this just gut feel for the coach? He felt this was the way to go. Or is somebody saying, listen, this is what you do and this is how you get it the best out of it? I mean, I watched him on TV today, early this morning, when the team was being interviewed before they went out. And he was sitting with the team, and they were talking. He just sat there with a smile on his face. And the team was, you know, they alluded to him from time to time, but they each had a story to tell, and you can see they were keen to participate. I wouldn't say they're the most eloquent of speakers. I wasn't expecting that. But yet they articulated what they wanted to say in a way which you could really bring yourself into the picture. You could understand what they were talking, and black and white players were sitting together and having the same conversation. It was actually quite illuminating.
Yes, so I must say, to go back to your first question around a psychologist, I've tried to read between the lines. I mean, you don't know if they do. They certainly haven't expressed that publicly. But what I did notice, and I just want to share with you, as you said, their humility and their simplicity in terms of expressing themselves on and off the field. So even though they come from all these different backgrounds, they were able to express exactly what they needed to express from their personal stories. And he welcomed that. And he welcomed the diversities. And I think it was I can't think of his name right now. His nickname is the Viking. And he spoke about how he's actually played a World Cup before. He spoke about how this has been a special team because everybody has come from their very different backgrounds, and they've shared their stories, and they've connected with their vulnerabilities. But to go back to your question around how they honed that, how they honed their pressure, how they honed their diversity, was very much around giving 100% into their specific role on the field and off the field.
And when you have a psychological intervention with a sportsman, I mean, obviously talent comes first, because without the talent you won't be able to succeed. But of course, all champions are trying to exceed themselves. I saw once there was a boxer, and he said that champions, what are champions? Champions are those who can get up even when they can't. And, you know, you've got to bring it out of these people that there's something more that they can give. It's not just the talent. You need to be able to have such a self-belief. Is that part of what you do with all types of sports? Obviously there's difference between teams and individuals, but I mean, in general, is that really what what it's all about?
So,
I asked too many questions in one.
So my sense is that I'll just rewind a little bit. It's so interesting. When I did my thesis, and when I failed as a professional tennis player, my dream was to be top 10 and win Wimbledon. And I only got into top 400, which is not sufficient to make money, and I retired.
Well, out of 50,000 tennis players, I guess top 400 is not bad.
Okay, but My point is that when I did my thesis, I did my thesis on the making of champions, a constructed reality. And the intention was to go interview world champions, which I did. But something very exciting, I went back to, I had of course retired, and I went back to interview two of my mates who I traveled with on the professional circuit for a number of years. And those mates were top 10 in the world, 5 and 7 in the world. And the one I interviewed on the through email, she was in the States at the time. Her name was Amanda Kutzer. She made it to 5 in the world.
Sure.
And the other was Wayne Ferreira, and he made it to 7 in the world. And at the time, he was playing Davis Cup for Nelspruit. So they were still going. And I thought, I made all these questions with my supervisor during my master's, and I thought that I would get the answers that these professionals, these champions were superhuman, that they were extraordinary. I thought they were going to share with me only the positives of their journey and their strength and how resilient they are. And yet, both of them shared with me in such a comfortable way their ordinariness, their struggles, their doubts, the way they struggle with their worthiness and their self-belief, and they have to work on it. So that was my big revelation, is that most of these champions, and if I had to define the mindset of a champion, it is someone who is ordinary, and not all, some won't acknowledge their vulnerabilities, their weaknesses, the stuff they struggle with. And those champions usually struggle in other aspects of life and are only good at their sport. But the ones I'm more interested in, and I call the whole champions, and those are the majority that I studied. And those were ones who knew their strengths on the field and off the field, but they were open to constantly fortifying their mental weaknesses and, of course, physical weaknesses for their sport on and off the field. And that's become the new trend today. It's about really acknowledging, just looking, which is so in line with clinical psychology, looking at your struggles. Is it on the field, on the court, and off the court? And working through those struggles and finding, of course, for sport tools. It's all about mental tools to fortify those struggles, to make them into strengths, or to clean the mind, put them at the back of the mind and bring the attention on the field to what you need to execute. And that's what champions are constantly doing. They can acknowledge their ordinariness and they work constantly to become extraordinary in what they do, and they want to continue to expand. Most of them want to continue to expand in other aspects of life.
Right.
And they look to themselves to do this. This is another brilliant quality, is they take responsibility. They take ownership. They don't look at anyone else to do it for them.
So we're talking to Tony Gaddy. This is the HRD Hour. I have Natalie in the studio and Tabu. We're discussing what makes a champion, the mindset of champions. Tony Gaddy, top 400 tennis player in her day. Not bad at all. And now working in the space of making people better than they are. Tony, can this be extended to the business area, or is it only that you specialize in sport? Or can you bring it the best out of anyone? I'm looking for some advice.
So it's so interesting. I mean, if you look at, I just jotted down some qualities about Rassie Erasmus and how he is a mentally tough coach, and how he grew a mentally tough team, and how we can learn from it. And the points I distilled was the fact that he was honest, and he was open with his team, and he painted the picture of a higher vision and a higher purpose, and he got them all to rally toward that purpose. And that purpose was about hope for something much greater than them. And he acknowledged the pressure and the struggles of the forefront of such an important event, just like in the corporate world, just like in business. There's incredible pressure constantly. But he was able to redefine that pressure for the team. And I think that's where the business will really struggles, in just in terms of business leaders and they're reframing, they're redefining their relationship with the pressure. And because it's so intense for athletes, they are constantly working on how do I redefine pressure? How do I relate to it differently? And in order to relate to it differently, you have to really tune in to how it manifests in your body, how it manifests in your relationships, how it manifests with your coach. And that's what Rossi did so incredibly. He redefined the pressure for the Springboks as an amazing privilege that their purpose was to shift a nation. And then at the end, his beauty was his humility after they won. And that's a great thing for our business leaders too, is how humble he was at the last interview. Sorry to keep going back to the rugby. I've been obsessed with it.
You're not the only one. The whole country's obsessed with it.
But something that you're talking about is how he finds value in each person and gives them a specific role to run with. So almost like an orchestra conductor, bringing synchrony to people's strengths and bringing kind of teaching them to shine in their own way. Is that
the same? Mm-hmm. Yes, Natalie, you're so spot on, because there's an article about the captain, Sia Kolisi, and he speaks about how when he got this job as captain, just when you know where he comes from and the impoverished background he came from, and he expressed how this was such a struggle for him that he took on this role. He had to take on this role. He was selected to take on this role, and his game immediately dipped. And he got the support from, this is why my sense is, I don't think there's a psychologist, but he spoke about how he got the support from his physical coach, their fitness coach, and of course from Rossi. And their advice was for him to tune in to what he does well, to just focus on his role on the field. And when you are focusing on a place, a context where you're strong and you gain momentum there and you remind yourself of your worthiness on the field, then it's okay for that too. That can flow over off the field, which it certainly seemed to do.
So if you want to contact the studio and tell us your thoughts, you can telegram us on 061-895-1019. You can also SMS on 34519. We'll answer any questions. I'm sure we're talking to Tony Gaddy, a clinical psychologist and also a sports psychologist, and we're talking about really basically about how to become a champion, to the mindset of a champion. We've been discussing a lot about the Springbok rugby team, because clearly there must have been a work done within that team to have created champions out of a team which I must say that I think a lot of people in this country didn't really anticipate we would win, let alone get to the finals. And yet there was such a change around in that team that something must have happened. I don't think it was a divine intervention, but something must have happened to get that mindset right. And clearly he's got the formula. It's just a pity that he's now going to be the director of rugby and not remain in his position as coach.
Are you asking me that question?
It was basically a statement. But yes, it is a question. You're the psychologist. You're supposed to give us the answers.
I mean, I suppose when you're a director, you certainly can choose a leadership underneath you that's aligned to your beliefs, to your values, and to your manner of leading and coaching. And
and in part, leadership is handing on the baton, and it's empowering others to take on leadership roles. It's not holding it tight.
Yes, that's beautifully said, Natalie.
In fact, it's always been a glaring problem within South African sport that we don't seem to, or we haven't shown that we really have the coaches in all of these sports. But clearly we do. It's just a question of direction and how we approach it or how they approach it. And perhaps this is a lesson for all coaches to maybe take another look, at who they're looking after and also looking after themselves in this way and be able to bring the best. Because he obviously brought the best out of himself. He wouldn't have been able to bring the team along if he didn't bring the best out of himself. He had a dynamic which was able to pass on to the team. And you can see that the team actually is together, and they're together with him. They have a great respect for him. That's got. I mean, if you look at this at clubs like the Manchester United and other clubs, where suddenly the manager takes a dip, clearly the manager's not in tune or in step with the team.
Yes. I mean, I like what you say around lessons for South African coaches, and I think we have incredible coaches in South Africa. If you look at Lloyd Harris, he's coached by a South African. He's our second tennis player in rank. He's, of course, ranked in the world, but he's our number two men's tennis player, second to Kevin Anderson. And you get Chanel Simmons. She's our number one women's tennis player. She's also coached by a South African. What was unique for me about Coach Russi, and I've read so much on him, it feels like he's my friend.
He's all our friends.
For now, yeah. So what was unique for me is that he spoke about, we had many conversations. And those conversations were just that element of we had many conversations, where brings the image of you sitting in a circle. So he had mapped out the vision for the team first. And he was clear about the rules, about Springbok comes number one and you do your work. You work so hard to be your absolute best on and off the field. This was reiterated constantly. But the fact that we had many conversations, it just shows there was a lot of connection and equality in the team. Not so much top-down leadership, but more flat kind of leadership in terms of tuning in to the team member and hearing their story, their needs, what is going to bring the best out of them.
So really, attunement and presence. They often speak in parenting how our job is to give children roots and wings. And I wonder if that also links to the role of the coach, is somehow giving them a sense of a roots, that there's a history, that there's a sense of something quite important. It's not just you in the moment. It's connecting with something bigger than you, and then wings to really fly and to connect with one's bigger parts. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's a beautiful metaphor. Like, yeah, in the sense that, yeah, the history of the Springbok was certainly the roots and what it means, and the wings in the sense that he, like you said, tuned into the strengths of every player and listen to their stories. I think that plays a big role, and didn't dominate as an authoritative figure. He certainly led, but led and listened. And that was the nice balance just in terms of coaching today. Sometimes coaches can dominate without really tuning in, getting inside the mind of the athlete, and figuring out how you can bring the best out of them mentally and physically.
Well, you talk often about zone states. Can you tell us a little bit more about what that means?
So that's the ultimate, Natalie. That is every athlete. I say athlete, I mean sports person, but every athlete's dream. And it's interesting. The zone state is it's a spontaneous state that an athlete just slips into. You can't make it happen. And it's usually the state when athletes break records or they win championships. They play out of their mind. They perform at their peak consistently throughout the competition, throughout the match, and they're not even aware what has done this. It's almost like a dissociated state where they are totally in the moment. There's very little thinking. And
out of body experience.
Yeah, in a sense, it feels like you are performing, but someone else is pulling the string. Someone else is the puppeteer, and everything that is happening is to your advantage. And the job of the sports psychologist is to create, and of course the athlete, is to build a toolkit, a mental toughness or a mental in the moment toolkit for that sportsman. And they follow that toolkit, we call it process or routine, quite religiously before every competition and also during training. And then usually what happens, that toolkit serves to keep the athlete in the moment of the process.
Something which they can draw on.
I beg your pardon?
It's something which they can draw on when they...
Yes. Yes, when they need to stay in the moment, if perhaps there is forward thinking or they're rewinding, that they've made a mistake and they can't get away from that mistake. So it's a tool which brings the attention back to the moment instead of stuck on the past. And that tool could very much be, let's say in rugby, just feeling the ball, or while you're waiting for the players to get on the field, just grounding your feet and digging your spikes into the ground, bringing you to the moment. There's so many different tools. Taking a deep breath if you need to calm your anxiety. So the tools are really based around three most important mental toughness qualities, which is confidence, composure, and concentration. And when you know your tools...
Is there not a fourth dimension, and isn't that cash? Does money play a role?
Hopefully, if you have your toolkit and it works for confidence, composure, and concentration, you get the cash in the end. And then to go back to Natalie's question, often when your tools are automated and you work on your tools for confidence, composure, and concentration, preparing for the competition and in the competition, then often, well, I don't want to say often, hopefully more often, you slip into the zone state.
So we're talking to Tony Gaddy, a clinical and sports psychologist. We've got Natalie Solomon in the studio, and Tabu is pushing the buttons and keeping the red lights buzzing. And we're talking about what makes a champion, the champion mindset. If you want to participate, this is 061-895-1019 or SMS 34519, and we'll answer any questions that you might want to have or you might want to ask from Tony. Tony, just can I talk about money? You alluded to that a little earlier because you said, you know, you got into the top 400 and it became difficult to make a living from that. So, I mean, I don't think that the Springbok team, when they ran on the field, were thinking, well, at the end of, there's a little, you know, if they score a try, they're going to get X, or if they score a whatever it is, they're going to get something. But surely, money can either be detrimental to your being because of, obviously you've got other things on your mind, and money on the other hand can make it, it's something to achieve. And if there is a goal, well, isn't that something to, or is money incidental in making a champion?
Sure. From my experience, I've never come across a sports person who is the first inspired or motivated or driven by the money. It's very much around their enjoyment, their excitement around stretching their ability at each moment in their sport and seeing how far they can stretch their ability. And of course, as they get better and better, and as they improve and as they start to succeed, the money certainly feeds in, because it's you get a huge paycheck. You understand what it takes, and then you're going to work extra hard when you go back to the drawing board for the next for the next competition or the next cup or the next tournament.
But if you take, if you take the obscene amounts paid to, let's take the English footballers, they're getting obscene amounts. Now, let's say I'm one of the champion soccer player. I've come up. I'm now, you know, I'm in the team and another team makes an offer for me. And my team can't sell because they're not making enough. Does that not, I mean, you've got to have to gauge your worth by how much they're offering you or offering the team for you. So it's a bit of a slave trade. But on the other hand, it's, you know, does it not play on your mind? That player's, why is he worth 70 million pounds and I'm only worth 30 or 10 or 5 or whatever it is? Does that not, because that's very public. When you're playing like a Wimbledon tennis match, nobody's looking. I mean, afterwards, everybody wants to know what the check was. But we, you know, surely the and everybody's playing for the same amount of money, so it doesn't really figure. But in terms of what you're worth, does that not play on your mind? Or would that not play on your mind?
So, absolutely, it absolutely would do that. You can see the money and the expectation from the sponsors and the clubs imposes an immense amount of pressure, and the media and what's expected. But the job of the sports psychologist, the great athlete, is to be able to train your mind to look at, to zoom in on your worthiness and what you think counts about how well you can play. And to have almost a short memory. I love how Federer's manager talks about his short memory, and he's just remarked at this guy's short memory around losses. That doesn't mean to say he doesn't feel the pain of losses. He feels the pain enormously. He even speaks about how he gives himself a 24-hour mourning period around losing a match or losing a tournament, Roger Federer.
Yeah.
But then he's over it, and his task is to work on the next step, on how he can progress, how he can improve, how he can fight harder so that he can be the best that he can be in the moment on the court, and then the money will take care of itself. And that's very much in parallel to how Rossi spoke to the players. He said it many a time, it is about how you play on the field. Just play well and everything will take care of itself. Focus on your role and give it 1,000,000% on the field, and the winning will take care of itself. And that's what we try to do, is really redefine the pressure by bringing the athlete to the moment on the field and what's really important in their lives off the field. It's not only about the money. There are bigger people. There are the ones who handle the pressure well understand that they are a father. They are a brother. They are a husband, and they invest and they want to grow their worthiness. They want to grow themselves off the court too, off the field too. It's not only about being defined by their money and who they are as a sports person.
So in a business sense, so we're the Hebrew Order of David. We're a fraternity. We have leaders. We have people in the organization. How do we become champions? How does, you know, us mere mortals, how do we rise above ourselves? What advice can you give us, in simple terms? What does a person do? You know, they've got private lives, they lose a job, they're not getting the increase that they wanted, or they're not getting the promotion that they wanted. I mean, how do you bridge that? How do you block out the noise and do your best? That's tough.
That's incredibly tough. Like that's real life, and there's less support, as you can't compare it to a top athlete who has enormous amount of support. But the key is around, like I said, it's about knowing yourself well and being able to acknowledge your weaknesses as normal, as part of the process of growth. And access as much support as you can from your internal world and from your external world. So I often say, be your own coach inside your head, and your positive coach who would say to you, I back you. I believe in you. I remember the time you did this. I remember the time you did that, which were great achievements. And by zooming in to your successes in the past will feed you for the next challenge.
So when when you're in many companies, and I'm sure it's the same with sports teams and sports players, it's a kind of a carrot or the stick approach. So in companies, sometimes, you know, you work in a company and all they want to do is wield the big stick. You know, you're always under threat. You're always in a position where whatever you do seems to be wrong. You got to rise above that and do your best in spite of that. Whereas companies that would entice you to have a better feel about what you're doing, to sort of really go along or reward you for what you've done. I mean, in sports, winning is the reward. So winning is everything. But in the commercial world or in your own life, whatever it is, you know, you're prone to the outside part. And surely a company is a team. So if you want to get the best out of your team as the leader, you need to apply the same formula. You know, don't always wield the big stick. You know, apply the carrot.
Yeah. Well, which is why leadership is such an enormous role, and it's such an important role. But I always say I have a talk called Harnessing Your Inner Critic. And we all have a voice inside our head, which is the critic, which is the doubter, the defeatist voice who puts us down. And that can be really amplified with a negative stick leadership approach. And, but as Natalie knows in psychology, when you know one side of a continuum, the criticism, you also can find the other side of the continuum, which is the praise, which is the positive reinforcement for yourself. And you, it's hard work, but you have to dig deep and find it. And if there isn't a leader who's inspirational, who plays the role of the carrot approach, it is about really working hard inside your head and being like a great sports person and drawing on what you do well, zooming in to your strengths and playing your role to the best of your ability and honoring yourself for it.
So by my mother, I'm the champion, you know, I'm the captain. By everybody else, maybe not so much. So,
well, then that's a good start. Sets you up for life. Tony, can you tell us a little bit about what are the lessons sports teaches us in terms of for life? What can sports?
And is it important at school level and so on growing up?
So, you know, it's so interesting how, I'll quickly share with you this whole thing about my failure. My dream was this professional tennis player, and all I ate, drank and slept tennis. And my dream was to win Wimbledon, and I visualized it every night and holding up that golden plate. And I did feel like an absolute failure when I had to give up. And it was heartbreaking. It was devastating. But what was so interesting is the tools, the qualities I learned from that journey, the discipline, the commitment, the focus, the hard work, the drive, I channeled into a different area. I then channeled into my profession, into almost this obsession around champions and what makes a champion really. And so the qualities I used, I say that to many an athlete who comes to me. I say to them, it's wonderful to have these great, great goals and to have these big desires and have them. Remember, whatever happens with the outcome, it is the journey and the tools and the skills and the qualities you learn on this journey that are going to be so valuable if you draw on them. And it took me time to draw on them. I mean, for years, I really felt that I was a failure. And then I started to look at the value of the journey that I had. And, that really can be valuable for school person or for any person who wants to take this journey of a sports person and what it does for personality and for the opportunities and avenues that it can open up.
Don't you have to fail to succeed in some ways? I mean, let me give you an example. So Coca-Cola used to hire people. They didn't want to hire people who always were successful. They wanted to hire people who understood failure. So they looked for people who maybe didn't do that well or didn't actually fail in that strict sense. They weren't complete failures, but they had been involved in stuff where it didn't quite work out or whatever. But they understood the meaning of failure, which means they better understood the meaning of success, what it would mean if they were successful. And I think maybe you could apply that. And now I'm being the psychologist. Maybe your sense of failure in those early days, you know, is the reason why you're so successful today.
So Stan, it's so true, because if I had to define, of course, my what makes a champion has evolved over time, but looking back, the essence of the legends is not about their successes. It is about how they handled their failures, how they handled the discomfort around what the intensity of pressure brings, what the media brings, what expectation brings. It is their ability to be comfortable in the uncomfortable.
Yes, it's kind of getting out of adversity. You can actually find success because you can overcome all of these. It's really something that you can overcome in anything. I mean, I was involved at one stage in running. I'm proud to say that between Bruce Fordyce, Alan Robb, and myself, we won 14 comrades. And
wow. That's true.
Well, Bruce has won 9 and Alan and Robb 5. And so, you know, I'm in the circle. No, but seriously, I mean, when you know what you can, when you reach your level, but I think that in yourself, you always have this feeling, whatever you do, and I think it goes back to school days and that, can you do that a little bit better? Maybe it goes back to when when you're a student, and also you need that success to be able to pull yourself through, but also you need to be able to overcome the failure by saying, you know, I can do better, and knowing that you can do better maybe is a key to a lot of people's success, and really working on the strong points.
It's grit.
True grit.
Yeah.
And it's knowing that mistakes and failure are going par for the course. I always say that are par for the course. And the key is about how you handle them, which is going to springboard you forward or dig the slump even deeper. And that grit is so important because it's not a big, I like to really simplify it. Like, champions are like you and me. They are different because they do little bit extra. A little extra than you and me. And it's the way they handle it's an art of being resilient and how they tune into the learning of the failure and how that learning can make the next step of the journey so much more valuable for them.
So now I'm going to make one announcement about the Hebrew Order of David, a forthcoming project. And then in the remaining moments, Tony, I'm going to give you an opportunity to talk a little bit about yourself, your two young sons, who I'm sure you really, that's been more important than anything else in your life. Except for Alon, of course, the husband who features somewhere, I guess. So the Hebrew Order of David, international fraternity, we now hold a series of talks and events. And the one event that's coming up is what we call the Royals. It's for people in the community who are elderly and come from wherever you are. You don't have to live in a home. You obviously live in a home, but you could, in one of the homes around town, you can come free of charge on the Thursday, the 14th of November. We give you tea and cake. But before that, you're going to listen to Lee Noodleman, who's giving you a Yiddish experience. She's an amazing singer. She talks about her life in song, using Yiddish songs as a platform. And you're welcome to come along. There's no charge. It's on Thursday, the 14th of November at the HOD Center, which everybody knows in Oakland's Orchards. And you're welcome to come along. And this is the Hebrew Order David Hour. We've been privileged to have Tony Gaddy. It's been fascinating. And thank you for coming on. But in the remaining 2 minutes you've got, 60 seconds, can you give us what they call the elevator pitch, which I'm sure your husband Alon is very well versed in, about Tony Gaddy? You can give out a phone number if you want to.
So I have this fascination of expanding oneself and channeling it into sport. And I have to tell you, my two sons have certainly showed me that. They've shown me about, showed me how to tune in to another human being, another internal world, and figure out what brings the best out of any other human being. And it's not about what you think is right for them. It's really about meeting halfway and the art of building and expanding another human being, and in that process expanding the self. And of course my husband Alon, who has been the biggest challenger and the biggest stretcher of my ability, and yeah, probably thanks to him and of course to my two sons that yeah, I do what I do and I love what I do. And yeah, that is the essence of being a clinical psychologist with a special interest in expanding great sports people.
And you're working with your sister in an organization which you've started called the Champion Academy. Tell us.
That's right.
Where do they find you? Is it www.championacademy, or how do they get hold of you?
Yes, the website is www.championacademy.co.za, and we run courses for youngsters and for professionals on mental toughness, mastering pressure, and learning the secrets and toolkits of champions.
So unfortunately, like all champions, we ran out of road. The show's over. Wish everybody a good yonta. Thank you, Tony. Thank you, Natalie. Thank you, Tabo. And it's been really a wonderful hour. Thank you.